And welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And, so the Spartacus Gay Travel Index. Now, this is for folks who wanted to, it's a gay travel website. Mm-hmm. But they have a point-based system. You know, is it the most rigorous testing methodology in the history of the world? Probably not. But as a loose frame of reference, which is what I think most people use the Spartacus Gay Travel Index for, I don't think they're quite using it to plan the UN schedule, as it were. Mm-hmm. But I think as a loose index of sort of where countries are doing and how they're doing, it's not a bad jumping off point. But I was a little surprised. Well, first of all, I wasn't surprised at how well Canada placed. Mm-hmm. But I was a little bit surprised that Malta came out on top. Like, did you know that Malta was doing so incredibly well?
Well, if this is the interesting thing, looking at their little scoreboard here, locals hostile, they got a -1 for that, but for all the legal stuff. So anything to do with the legal standing of LGBTQ people in Malta is basically ones all across the board, doing really well. Canada tied with Switzerland, but they said we get nothing in terms of LGBT marketing. And I have seen ads, and I don't know what they're talking about. I don't know why we're getting a zero for that. But yeah, so the it's kind of loosey-goosey. It's Malta being #1. Is kind of surprising, but Saudi Arabia being right at the bottom of the list, not so surprising.
Yeah, so for our audience sake, they measure things on the scale of anti-discrimination legislation, marriage or civil partnership, adoption being allowed, trans rights, intersex identity inclusion, the mm-hmm. equal age of consent. Does conversion therapy exist? Is there LGBT marketing? I suspect that's probably the don't say gay laws would run afoul of those. And then is there religious influence? Are there HIV travel restrictions, anti-gay laws? Is homosexuality illegal? Is pride banned? Is there hostility locally? Is there prosecution, murders, or death sentences? And so Canada does not have prosecutions, murders, or death sentences. So that's mm-hmm. that's pretty good news. We're doing pretty well on that front. Mm-hmm. But I did jot down where some of the other ones landed up. So Canada was joint second with Switzerland. Very mm-hmm. exciting. And Malta came up right at the top. So if you're planning a nice getaway to the sun, recommend Malta. But then the United Kingdom was down at 10th. And then I was a little bit curious. I was like, I wonder where this American company has placed the United States of America on their tourism travel index.
Uh-huh.
And without looking, because I know you're looking, where would you guess in the list of 160-odd countries in terms of LGBT travel that the United States of America would fall?
Well, I know that there's a separate listing for each individual state. I don't see where it is overall. I'm going to guess somewhere in the sort of 20 to 30. This is in terms of, by the way, travel and tourism. This is not in terms of living there. So yes, a lot of the issues that affect this, would it affect you as a tourist? Mm-hmm. Probably not in most cases. If you're a tourist just visiting a country, I would say United States is probably not as well off as Canada in terms of tourism. Just, you know, if things happen to you, how's the healthcare system going to treat you? You need to consider things
also,
like emergencies.
I feel like it's very hit and miss in the States. Like New York, Los Angeles, you know, San Francisco, very gay, very fine. You're going to do fine. But if you're mm-hmm. in, you know, the backwaters of Tennessee, maybe not so great at this point.
I mean, there's stereotypes, but you also have that sort of good country folk, well, he ain't hurting nobody, you better leave him alone. That kind of attitude is also out there somewhere, you know? So it's a mixed bag. Where do they put themselves? Where do they put the U.S.?
35th. There are 34 countries that are better for gay tourists than the United States. So it's certainly... But it's interesting. I was talking to my gay hairdresser, mm-hmm. and did a fantastic job. I have just not done a fantastic job of maintaining it. Mm-hmm. But we were talking about travel, and he was talking about getting down to the States and Florida, and generally he was talking about Ron DeSantis and some of the anti-gay legislation to come out of that state, and said, you know, he'd go every year, twice, two, three times a year to Miami, great mm-hmm. time, bringing all those Canadian dollars.
I was going to mention Miami. I have coworkers there. As you know, my company is spread out throughout the world, and I actually had a 2-hour-long meeting with somebody from Miami a while ago, and he referred to it as the most progressive conservative city in America.
Well, it's having the DeSantis discourse is having an impact because this random hairdresser said, you know what? I think I'm going to go to an all-inclusive in Cuba because it's about the same money. Mm-hmm. And it's the sense that legally and just in general, he would have felt safer at a resort in Cuba than in Miami with the anti-gay rhetoric coming out of the States at the moment. So I don't know. I think the Americans are. I don't know if they have a huge gay tourism draw, but I think they're slowly ceding ground to places like Mexico and other literally hotspots. In the Caribbean.
Well, they're also running into the same problem that a lot of Canadian cities are having, which is a lot of the old villages are being priced out just because of inflation and condos replacing everything. So, you know, the old Fire Island out on the East Coast and all the stuff on the West Coast around San Francisco and LA, a lot of them are being priced out. No one can afford to go to them anymore. And then you get things like there's a growing community in Portland. So Oregon, old cowboy country, is now sort of turning into a really good place for queer tourism. Then there's, what is it? There's that city that has like 80% of the population is queer. I can't remember what it is. It's like a little retirement village. But yeah, it's really weird. I've heard really good things about Ohio and Iowa, that the big cities there are actually incredibly friendly and they're great places to go for tourism. And there's been sort of a shakeup. Some of that has to do with a lot of the recent, let's say, discussion in the media. And some of it just has to do with the fact of demographic shifting, people not being able to afford to live in their own neighborhoods anymore. Some of that, like, what's the word I'm looking for? The thing with the bourgeois ruin everything.
Oh, gentrification.
Gentrification, yeah. A lot of the old...
with the bourgeois, you ruin everything. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. A lot of the old neighborhoods are being gentrified. And I don't know. I'm in the category of gentrification's a mixed bag. It's mostly bad, but can be good. Like, Detroit could use a little bit. I think New York could use far less. Toronto could use way less. But anyway, so yeah, tourism in the States is in general, like, go on Reddit and ask a local. It's really hard to predict sometimes, because even here in Ontario, there are parts of the country, Ontario that are known for, you know, countryside narrow-mindedness, and there's other communities that are well known for "he ain't hurting nobody, best leave him alone" attitudes. Like, it's kind of inconsistent. I've heard really good things about Goderich, somehow, but then, you know, I don't know. It's all over the place.
You know, there is a good example of that, perhaps, with Moncton, New Brunswick. It is one of the only places in New Brunswick I haven't been to. It is it's more French than English. Mm-hmm. And they had about 30 people show up to protest a drag queen reading from a children's book. Now, we're not talking about a salaciously dressed drag queen. There was no stripteasers. It was just a Dolly Parton-esque type-looking drag queen reading a book. So that 30-odd people showed up to protest the drag book reading in Moncton, New Brunswick.
Which book was it? Was it the one with the mouse who wants a glass of milk?
Or maybe it's The Two Penguins. That might be. That's always a very popular one as well.
What was the one with penguin? The mouse that wanted a glass of milk. What was that one?
Someone's going to have to reach out and let us know. What is the one with the glass of milk? And we'll see if there's any responses. But my point maybe here is where 30 people from around the area showed up to protest someone reading a book, there were 150 people who showed up to demonstrate that, you know what, this is fine. and mm-hmm. the grown adults that are making their decisions about parenting, the many people in responsible positions in the library that arranged it, mm-hmm. that it's fine. Everything is fine. And, you know, nobody is at risk here except for maybe being yelled at on the way in mm-hmm. to get there. But it was quite the astonishing demonstration of support in Moncton, with 150 people showing up to support this event compared to the 30-ish that were protesting it. I believe that there was a similar event in Halifax that also got recently protested as well. But on the whole, It's, you know, you know, all things, you know, balanced out, there is a lot more people in favor of either just minding your own business, which mm-hmm. is always an option, or just in favor of letting folks who want to go, that no one's being dragged. Well, the performers are being dragged, but that's another interpretation. No one is being uh-huh. forced to go and attend these things, you know, and it's frustrating. It reminds me of an Ipsos poll that came out recently in the States, where they were looking at the idea of whether or not people like being woke, because there's this push that woke is the worst thing ever, mm-hmm. and everyone is against it. It's being very much sort of vilified as a concept. Now, being mm-hmm. woke is generally just being aware of. So the USA Today did an Ipsos poll of about 1,000 people. And they found that 56% chose to be informed, educated, or aware of various social injustice elements. And that's fundamentally at the bare minimum of what being woke really is. It's just
there's two different
informed.
Angles to it, though, because there's wokeness as in paying attention to injustices, but then wokeness is also a specific... people treat it as being a specific framework through which to view these events. So you can agree that there are problems with, let's say, food accessibility in food deserts in impoverished neighborhoods, but you could have a different reading about what to do with it or what that symbolizes or what that means. So, I mean, it's I don't know, that kind of framing feels kind of weird. I've also heard a lot of people now starting to talk about being post-woke, because now there's like an anti-woke thing happening where they just anything woke, they reject it outright. And then you have these other people who are like, well, sometimes wokeness is right, sometimes it's not right. It's not about agreeing or disagreeing. It's about just listening to it as a thing. And sometimes you go, oh, I agree. I agree with the analysis.
This seems to be an age thing. So according to this study, they found that the respondents' age actually had a pretty big impact on how they understood this concept.
Okay.
For people aged 50 to 64, they understood woke to be overly politically correct and to be policing other people's words. So 50 plus viewed it as this sort of authoritative leftist fascism.
Okay.
And then, whereas when it comes to 18 to 34 year olds, it was about 30% had that perception and others didn't. Hang on a second. And then we also had 37% of 35 to 49 year olds feeling the same way. So how people are understanding the term seems to be depending on who you are and where you are and how old you are. Mm-hmm. But I think my underlying point here is that fundamentally, when these people were asked, is it important to be educated? The vast majority said, yes, it's important mm-hmm. to be educated.
Yep. I think any right-thinking person, any...
Oh, we seem to have lost Sebastian. All right. Whilst we bring him back online as he tells us what any right-thinking person may or may not do, this is Say by Dan Brownrigg, and we will be back just after this.
There you go.
Oh, you're back. We're just jumping to a song.
Yep,
and then you can tell us what right-thinking people would think. All right, we'll be back just after this.
Say, say, say all that you want to. Say, say, say your words they don't choose.
Hello and welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And we don't have a huge amount of time left, but I just want to reiterate here, I'm not trying to adjudicate on whether or not what is or what isn't woke. I think the point I'm trying to get across is that when you actually survey large numbers of people, and they found this also, you know, was the same in Britain, mm-hmm. that the majority of people, and I suspect it's the same of our listeners, either are just not that bothered, you know,
yeah.
or, you know, it's not more important to them than the price of eggs, or, you know, being informed is broadly a good thing. And, it's, you know, it's just like, you know, you do you.
My own mother had no idea what wokeness was, what the word was, how what it meant, how to interpret the word. And then if you outline individual things like, you know, here's a claim, here's a belief, here's a stereotypical belief, here's sort of a cartoonish version of that belief that you might see on the news. And she's like, oh, all that? That's lumped together as one idea? It's like, yeah. And she's like, oh, okay, yeah. You know, in general, you know, she understands why they're upset, but she wished she would calm down. But but even then, it depends on what the story is, because sometimes she's like, they are exactly as angry as they should be. So I don't know. It's a complicated thing overall. And as I was saying before, the connection got all weird, is ideally you would hope that all people, regardless of where they sit on the political spectrum, would agree that getting your hands on information before you open your mouth is a good move. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, from that perspective, I think ideally, I don't think anyone would disagree with that portion of it. I should hope anyway.
No, I agree entirely. I did want to
also, no two people are going to agree on how to define a living social movement. Like, you could probably find something from the late 60s, early 70s where no two people would agree on what a hippie is.
Mm.
So, I mean, you're just going to run into that by nature of it still being active.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely spot on. Okay, so the other thing I wanted to mention is that now that World Pride has wrapped up in the States, very exciting, the next place it's going is actually Washington, D.C. So they will be hosting World Pride in, I want to say, I'm not sure if it's 2024 or 2025.
Oh, that's complicated.
Which is the next one. But yeah, 2025 is the next one. Yeah, so it's going to be pretty big, you know. The World Prides draw massive audiences, so I'm sure our listeners may recall the World Pride that was in Toronto. I want to say 2018 or 17 or
something like 16. That. Yeah, recent, but before COVID.
Yeah, but not like distant past. Yeah, I think it was 18.
Yeah,
that's that number feels right.
Okay, yeah.
For it.
We're both sitting in front of the internet. I'm going to type it
you're
in.
You're going to Google it. but yeah, so the World Pride, when it came to Toronto, had about, I think it was an estimated as 1 million people participating, bearing in mind that the city, the downtown city of Toronto, has like 3 million or had 3 million at the time. So it is a massive influx of people that comes in. And likewise,
2014.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I was way off.
Time flies.
It really does. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the fact that it's going to DC is going to have a huge impact, obviously, on DC Pride and really kind of amplify it from there.
I can guarantee that's going to generate a ton of interesting stories as well, because as I'm sure you know, DC is the city without a state. It is. They have a whole bunch of issues to do with funding and local city planning and whatnot, because they're in this weird limbo. That's weirdly enough that this is going to be one of those things where we may end up talking about what a local alderman says this time next year.
Yeah, but we always talk about the local alderman. So, I mean, that's not necessarily a new thing.
Uh-huh.
We will keep an eye on it, because I think it's certainly going to be interesting as they try and push for, obviously, people to go and visit. That now we did see great representation being winning in the Oscars. This was the most pleasant, cute, adorable, tear-jerking, make-you-cry, sickeningly sweet, nice Oscars that I have ever seen. It was lovely.
I had no idea that it happened.
Yep, it happened yesterday. It was lovely. Everyone had a lovely time. It went well. There was no controversies. Everyone had lovely speeches. The directors of Everything Everywhere All at Once did do a bit of a dig at the Tennessee law that banned drag shows. Well, actually, what they've banned in Tennessee is exotic adult entertainment in public, which was already banned.
Right. Yeah.
The attorney general for Tennessee issued a statement saying that then nothing's changed. Like, they've just added a new law, which other laws already banned. So it's just
Got it. It's the same.
So on the one hand, that means drag performers in Tennessee are breathing a bit of a sigh of relief that the law enforcement agencies are not going to start rounding them up. But it does really point out that it was a massive waste of time and a phenomenal misdirection. You know, it really was, look over there with legislation to ban drag shows, when in effect they did not ban drag shows. They have not banned drag storytelling. What they have banned is strip teases in front of children, which may shock you to know was already illegal in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. My cynical approach is this is government trying to look busy.
This is government being distracting, is what I suspect.
England is famous for this, where they debate something in parliament and then it turns out they didn't have to do that because it was already on the books, or you know, they're gonna ban setting your own house on fire, and they're going to debate that for 4 hours because there's something else they don't want to talk about. So they're going to do this really obvious thing instead that's technically already on the books, but this exact phrasing of it is not already in the books. I don't know. There is a lot of time wasting in politics, sometimes deliberate time wasting as well.
Well, we kept an eye on the Tennessee drag ban, and we'll continue to monitor the other bans that are being introduced across the state. We are playing out now with all your favorite bands, the Alison Krauss cover featuring Sarah Miller White.
Thank you for listening.